All right, I would like to introduce our first speaker. Just a brief introduction. I think the first time I met this lady is, I think it was at a Grateful Dead concert this summer, actually. It was like the first time I formally met her, and you know, it was awesome. You know, it was really cool knowing that there were people like me there, you know, that I would be able to enjoy a show like that. And it was really a beautiful thing. So I don't think I've ever heard you speak, so I'm really looking forward to this. So without any further, I give you Paula Kaye from the We Need a Miracle group of NA in the North Pittsburgh area of NA.
How long are we supposed to speak?
I think it's like a half hour or so.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name's Paula.
Paula in some circles.
I'll tell you the story about that real quick. We were at an Ask It basket once, and I put my name in the basket, right? Paula. And someone stood up and said, Paul A. So that has stuck with me. It's pretty funny, actually. Okay, my name's Paula, and I am an addict. It's really an honor to get asked to speak anywhere. I'm not a real fan of topics sometimes because I get really nervous and like, oh, what am I going to say? But I was taught a long time ago to kind of turn that over, and I pray like I do. And I had somebody tell me once, ask for like your higher power to speak through you. So whatever comes out is not mine, it's my higher power's. I was asked to speak on steps 10, 11, and 12. I'm a firm believer, as I've heard said already today, that the steps is how I live. The steps is how I stay clean. It is how I'm able to incorporate this stuff in my life. It's how I'm able to go to a Grateful Dead concert and not have to get it in, right? It's how I'm able to go somewhere like that and be still involved in a piece of service work that I've learned here. Step 10 says we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I learned a long time ago to kind of incorporate that step in my life. What I learned is that if I address those things that come up right away, then I don't have to carry it around with me and feel like a piece of shit for any period of time. I was always really good at like just honing in and hanging on to all those things. Oh, I did this, and oh, I did that, and when I was 7, I did this, and like all that stuff, right? So what I learned in the 4th and 5th step is I was able to let go of some of that stuff. In the 8th and 9th, I was able to make some amends and put those people on the list and all that stuff that people talked about before. So what I learned about in step 10 is I need to pay attention to my gut, because that's how my higher power speaks to me. When my gut says, you should not have did that, or you should not have said that, I've learned to pay attention to that, and because that says, you know, sometimes my gut will tell me that before, and I do it anyway. I don't do it as much anymore because it's painful, but so I've been able to, from working some steps, and you all taught me that if I make prompt amends, right, or just stop doing that. I hear that a lot from sponsors and people that love me. Stop doing that. If it causes you that much pain, maybe you should stop doing that. So I try to do that. Now, I will tell you that working this step formally was really a struggle for me. There's a pamphlet, Living the Program. I wasn't a fan. I did it for a couple of days, and it was like, this is ridiculous. This asks the same question over and over again. I'm not doing that. So, you know, then you sit on it and then you make yourself miserable. I don't know about you, but that's what I did. So eventually I was able to kind of make up my own questions. Like, what was important to me? What made my life unmanageable if I didn't practice it, and what helped me live a more spiritual life. So I kind of did that. I'm not that disciplined that I can do that every single day. I heard people talk about, like, at one point in their recovery, their sponsors would say, well, you got to do this every day for 30 days, and if you miss a day, then you have to do it again. And then you have to do it again. And then you have to do it again. See, I have this rebellious nature that says, no, I'm not. That's not always beneficial to me, but, you know. So what I learned is I overcomplicate things. I learned that over and over again. I overcomplicate it, and I just need to friggin' do it. Right? I just need to do it. And when that voice says, you have an opportunity here, don't do that again. Then I have to try not to do that again. And I have to make that amends right away. I've gotten way better at that. I've gotten way better at paying attention to that voice that says, say this now. Right? Whatever it is, good, bad, or whatever, I need to do that. I love the fact that we have this literature, right? We have this literature that tells us what to do. Even though I told you I'm rebellious, if I read this, it tells me what I need to do. There was a line in here that I wanted to say about step 10, that it's a pressure relief valve. I don't have to carry that around with me anymore, because I have a whole big bag of stuff that I'll carry around with me, right? I'll just carry that shit around and drag it from place to place. You know, I moved away a couple years ago, and I took all my stuff, you know, because I got lots of stuff, and I put it in a storage unit for 2 years. Then I unpacked it out of the storage unit and brought it back with me. There's a little bit of insanity in that plan. It's like I need to learn to unpack that shit and just let it go, right? I need to learn to say, okay, I don't need this anymore. This isn't serving me anymore, and I need to move on. And it's kind of step 10 stuff for me. It's like, say it, let it go, and move on. I don't have to keep repeating the same thing over and over again and getting the same results and wondering why my life still feels the way it does. I have new and better things to make it feel the way it does. Yes. And that is a good thing. And step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, her, it, whatever you want to put in there. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. See, when I first got here, I get caught up real in him. What do you mean him? I'm not going to do him. I don't want to say that. What if I don't believe in your God? Blah, 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 blah. That's what my head does, right? Instead of reading all the other beautiful, eloquent words in that step, I get caught up in that one. I didn't quite understand it. That's why someone said earlier about the steps in order, right? Doing the steps in order. Because I can read really good, right? And I read ahead. I'm going to read ahead and I'm going to do this. But I didn't understand it at the time, so good thing I didn't try to practice that all the time. I had a hard time with God, the word God. I was the one early on in the meeting. You can't say that here. Don't you dare say your God's name. Nope, nope, can't say that here. I went to another home group's group conscience once and told them all about how they shouldn't be doing whatever it is they were doing. There was some stuff happening, and somebody was acting a certain kind of way and saying certain things, and I was just totally offended by that, and I went to their group conscience and said, you can't do that here. That was their group conscience, not mine. So if I wasn't going to join that home group, I really needed to just go home and, you know, call my sponsor. I think step 11 for me is like the most beautiful thing ever. It's like doing all this stuff up to the step that was hard and painful and, oh, it's yucky and icky sometimes. Although there's lots of beautiful endings to those, right? And step 11 is like, wow. Wow. Right? Wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be, but it's still wow. And it's still this place that I get to explore. And it's an ongoing thing for me. I get to explore, like, what is this power that works in my life, right? What I've learned is I don't have to name it. I don't have to put it in a box. It doesn't have to be in a box. It doesn't have to live anywhere. Because it's in here. I was telling Will a story earlier about a couple years back. I got a chance to go to Sedona, Arizona, right? And I had read all about Sedona and how beautiful it was and how spiritual it was. And I thought, I'm going to go and find my higher power in Sedona. I'm going to find my life's purpose in Sedona. The world is going to open up for me. So I went there and I found this place called Buddha Beach, and it's in the desert, and I was intrigued. Beach? Okay. So I go back there and I find this place, and I end up in this place alone. My family was over there. I kept going back, and it was this beautiful little place where the stream was running down, and there was the rock formations that people balance, right? And there was thousands of them, thousands. It was really cool. It was really awesome. And I went back and I kind of just said, wow, this is pretty cool, right? This is an awesome place. And I sat down and I just sat for a minute and kind of like, this is where I'm going to find my purpose. This is where I'm going to find my higher power. So I heard, I wasn't hearing voices. It's not like a voice talked from the sky or the mountain. But I heard somewhere in me that said, you know, it's really cool that you came to this really beautiful place. But you didn't have to come here to find your higher power or your purpose, because it's right there. It's inside you. So in some ways, I did find what I needed to in Sedona, Arizona. But it wasn't in Sedona, Arizona. You know? It was here. And that was kind of a beginning for me. Like, oh. That wasn't that long ago. So this journey has been that for me. And this 11th step is like this ongoing, beautiful journey that I can always bring it back to that. Now I know. I kind of know. I know stuff. Sometimes the stuff I know gets me in trouble. But this will not. Because I know I just got to bring it back and know that here it is. This is where my higher power lives. This is where my purpose lives. This is where, you know, my spirit lives. I believe that when, I know for me, when I come here, my spirit gets fed, right? I was looking around before and I'm in the woods, and this is what does it for me. You know, I can feel that whatever it is, I get fed. I listen to you. I get to meet new people. I get to connect with some people I haven't seen for a while. And to me, that feeds my spirit. It feeds my spirit. Now, I will tell you that I've been able to do some other things because I have you guys in my life, and I have a program of recovery that allows me not to have to get high a day at a time. I have some other things I can do in life, right? I can pursue some of my other passions, and there's several of them. I like travel, I like music, you know, different things. And I'm able to do that. I'm able to go and do that. But I don't get it twisted, ever. Because if I get it twisted, then I'm in trouble. I know. This I know. This is where I stay clean. This is where I learn how to live my life. It says somewhere in the book that we learn how to live here. I forget the exact words. I'm not that good at it. But it says it in there somewhere. This is where we learn how to live. I never lived before. I don't know what it was like for you, but I know what it was like for me. And I really just wanted to die. For a long, long time, I just wanted to die and couldn't. I had some periods of time in recovery where I thought, well, I just should just die because this shit is hard and it's not worth it, and fuck it. The addict's mantra, right? Fuck it. But this is where I get fed. I get fed because I listen to you. I'm able to take this step and this whole steps and just like incorporate them into my life, right? Now I can fill my pack up with that. And I don't have to carry around all the bullshit. Hey, hi there, cutie. Hi.
Yay.
Yay. That's right. Yay. You're good. So I get my spiritual needs met here. This is the only place. Thank you. Thank you. I got a present. It's a beautiful thing. No, you're fine. He's fine. That's what it's about, right? That's what it's about. When I got here, my kids were young. My oldest daughter really wasn't speaking to me, and she shouldn't have. I had three little kids that I brought to meetings with me all the time. They didn't have, look, I drugged them through addiction, so I drugged them here too. They learned how to live because of you guys. It wasn't nothing I did. So I think that's just a beautiful thing, man. But, says here, an attitude of surrender and humility. We approach this step again and again to receive the gift of knowledge and strength from the God of our understanding. I can say the God word now and not go, I can listen to you. I think someone said it earlier. I can listen to you say God and not go, oh, don't say that here. Because it really doesn't matter what you do in that respect. It doesn't matter. The book tells us we can all have our own version of a higher power, right? Mine changes from day to day sometimes. And that's okay, too. This is just such a beautiful step. And the spiritual principle for me is humility. And so then you move on to step 12, right? And to me, it's sort of like if you think about like when you read about the grieving process, right? They tell you these different things that'll happen during the grieving process. You know, sadness, anger, denial, all that stuff. To me, the steps are the same way. They're not in that order, though, is what I'm saying. I kind of forgot to tell you the other part I was thinking. I do that a lot, too. It's like it doesn't happen in a linear fashion. It doesn't like, well, this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens. That's not how life happens, right? To me, the steps are in order for a reason, and we have to kind of work them in an order. But once I know about them, it's like I can't unknow them. And they kind of plop in and out, right? They kind of plop in and out. It's one of my favorite things, I think, about Narcotics Anonymous and what I've learned here through this recovery process is once I know something, I can't unknow it. Once I know that there's a better way to live, I can't unknow it. I can go back out and use, oh, hell yeah. Yep, could do that. A lot of us do. I haven't found that necessary yet, and I pray that I don't. But what I was taught here is if I continue to practice this at a day at a time, I don't have to. But I have another way to live. So step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Whoa. That is a... It said something about this is a big order in one of our readings. That's a damn big order. I'm not good at practicing this in all my affairs. I find it much easier to practice it here with you, right? Especially in the woods, because we're all like, yeah, this is great, man. But I'll take that back, because I was the one up there bitching this morning about the guy that wouldn't shut up last night. At 4 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't thinking very spiritually. So I'll take that back. I'm still working on this. See, it's okay until it affects me. Gosh. Self-centeredness is the core of our disease. So we come to Narcotics Anonymous as a result of the wreckage of our past, right? The last thing we expected was an awakening of the spirit. We just wanted to stop hurting. That talks about how I got here. That is how I got here. I didn't want to stop getting high. I really didn't. I couldn't even think about that. I just didn't want to hurt and feel the way I felt anymore because I just wanted to die, and I couldn't, and that was a hell of a way to walk around the world, right? So I just wanted to stop hurting. Gosh, I remember the first time I read this book, I had gone to some rehab somewhere, and they gave you a book. This was a while ago, so they gave you a book to take home. Not only do the fancy places do that, but I read the whole book, and I was like, whoa. They're talking about me, right? Anyway. Awakening of a spiritual nature. I never thought that was going to happen for me. I didn't think that was possible. I didn't believe in God, right? What I had learned about God as a child was scary and sad and painful, right? What I knew about God at that time in the world was this punishing person that usually by the time I, well, whatever it was, I was seven, I was going to hell, so what was the point? That's just how it was for me, so I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. If this is what God is, I don't know if I can get right with that. I just don't know that it's possible. So when I think about being able to have this spiritual awakening, because somewhere in here all along was this spirit thing that just wanted to be free, I think, you know. I couldn't have told somebody that a long time ago, because I would have thought you would have thought I was totally insane. Maybe you do now, I don't know, but I don't really care, because that's how it feels for me. See, I have been able to follow a path of finding a higher power in spirituality where people have been placed in my life, right? And I say, hey, what about this? And they go, yeah. And maybe somebody out there says, that's a little woo-woo. I don't know. We have a friend that calls it the woo-woo stuff, right? But it's a beautiful thing here that we are able to follow this path, and while following that path and having the spiritual awakening, that we get to like carry the message, right? We get to carry the message like it was carried. I am so grateful to be able to carry a message that was just like was given to me when I got here, and you told me I don't have to live this way anymore. I didn't believe you, but you told me that. I don't have to get high. If I just stay here and don't use, then my life will get better. I don't know that I believed you, but I didn't have anywhere else to go. I really didn't. You taught me about being of service, right? You taught me that. And you said if I do those things, then my life will get better. I had no idea how much better my life could get. And it has nothing to do with the things I thought were going to be what they were going to be. You know, big houses and all this stuff, right? That wasn't my story. I was able to buy a house once. That blew my mind. I was like, man, I hope they do this really fast before they find out who the hell we are and say, oh, we was just kidding. You can't buy a house. That, you know, my story didn't involve like all that kind of stuff, and that's okay, because that doesn't matter anyways, for real. None of that matters. I'm able to carry a message of recovery wherever I go. Yes, here in meetings, right? Because I show up at my home group, because you taught me that that's really important to show up at my home group. Most every Tuesday at 8 o'clock, I'll be at my home group. Once in a while, I'm not, but most every Tuesday, I am. I'm involved in my home group. I'm a treasurer of my home group. That makes me happy. I'm able to be of service to my home group. You also taught me that that's the highest form of service, is to my home group. So we're able to carry that message, and the message says that we'll be here. We'll be here next week if you want to come back. Service work, like doing things like this. This is awesome. We're able to carry a message. But it's not just to us, right? It's to the people that work here, and they go, bunch of addicts? Really? Right? They let us come back. And we know we're not always the most well-behaved folks. Sometimes we're not. We try. But they still let us come back, right? Because there's enough of us that are well-behaved. Imagine that. That's pretty amazing. So carrying that message out to the world and, you know, yes, to the still suffering addicts, to the world, but there's so many ways we carry it. It just blows my mind. I work in treatment. That's one way I do it, but that's really a small part. Mostly, a whole lot of the times, it's not to the people we work, like the clients. It's to the other staff members that aren't in recovery, that don't quite get it. And I'm able to share some stuff because, you know, I work in treatment, so I can do that there. So, y'all told me early on I have a message to carry. Y'all told me early on that someday, like when they welcomed me into those home groups and when they loved me and hugged me, and those women said, we love you. And I thought, you don't even know me. And when you do, you're not going to say that. But they did. I'm so, so, so grateful for the people that loved me and hugged me and pulled me in and didn't say, don't come back here no more. My story wasn't, I didn't walk in here happy and dancing. I kind of crawled and was delirious. I was on methadone. I didn't think you were going to let me stay. But you did. People loved me. And I'm so grateful for that, because to me the message was love, caring, commitment, right? You guys just loved me through everything. And that's how you carried the message. When I had 15 years clean or whatever it was, and my world was falling apart, right? Everything was fucked up and it felt really dark. You carried the message to me that we're still here, right? I put myself in the middle, because that's what you all taught me to do. You said, you would say weird shit when I came around here. Get in the middle so you don't fall off. Okay. Like, what, are we going to be on a magic carpet or something? Kind of is, though, isn't it? You would say things like, your disease is over there in the corner doing push-ups. So, like, I think you guys stayed at the Kool-Aid stand a little too long. But I get it. I get those things now. You know what I mean? And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that. It says here, we feel that our lives have become worthwhile. I have a life worth living today. And it has nothing to do with the stuff. Because I don't have a whole lot of stuff anymore, and it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Sometimes that little voice creeps in and says, is this really where you're at? Really? Worked your ass off all these years, bah, 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 and you're in a two-bedroom apartment by yourself? So we shut that up real quick. And what you taught me was, go help somebody. You feeling jacked up? Go help somebody. First time somebody told me that, I thought, you're crazy. Didn't you hear me? I'm messed up. This is happening to me. But guess what? When I go help somebody, whatever it may be, I feel better, right? I'm not caught up in that obsession and compulsion and want to go drive my car off a cliff and all that craziness that goes through my head. Oh, my God. I have a friend that has the same thoughts a lot, and we would laugh on the phone going, yep. You know, multiple years clean, 15, 19 years clean. I wonder what would happen if I just drove my car into the median. You know, you don't want to say that to somebody else because they think you're suicidal. I'm not suicidal. I'm really not. But sometimes I know I don't want to use, so sometimes that would just be the easier way, right? No, that's kind of crazy and bullshit, but those are the way my head goes. So I carry the message by standing up here. I carry the message by going to work every day. It doesn't matter where I work. It just matters that I get up and go to work. Because I don't like going to work. I don't know about you. I would rather just have money and not go to work. But it doesn't work that way. And that wouldn't fulfill it anyway. So I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love the steps. I love the traditions. I love the fact that we get to come to the woods and, we're not getting it in. It's pretty cool. So thank you all for letting me share.
All right. I'm an addict named Alex. Our next speaker, first time I met this guy, he spoke at my home group, and like, he didn't pull any punches at all, and he was kind of intimidating, but he carried a really strong message. And and then after the meeting, I was real early in recovery at this point, and I was in the stage of like getting phone numbers every meeting I went to. And my sponsor's like, hey, make sure you get his number. Make sure you call him when you're working steps and ask him about steps. You know, and I still do that today to this guy. And so without anything further, I give you Greg M. from the Irwin Group of NA in the CWANA area.
I'm an addict My name is Greg. Try not to intimidate any of you. All right. I'm not really quite sure how this is going to go, so we're just going to get started and see what happens. This is cool because usually when I speak, we kind of run through the steps and traditions and whatnot, and usually by the time we get to 10, 11, and 12, we run out of time. With readings and blah 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 blah. So I refuse to do any of the previous steps of disservice by glancing over them, just to get to these ones. I will give you this small disclaimer. This is my experience with these three steps. There may be a little bit of variation between what you just heard or what you have gone through, and that is perfectly okay. This is the freedom we are granted in this program. I was told when I got to these steps to, kind of like what Alex had just said, talk to as many people as you can about them, get as many experiences as you can about them, find what works for you. And the way my process has been is we go step, tradition, step, tradition, step, tradition. So before I go into a tenth step, I've obviously done the first eight and or first nine steps and have some working knowledge of the first nine traditions. So I've become accustomed to the amends process. By the time I get to a tenth step, at least the first time through, I had gone through at least 70% of the amends that I need to make to full closure, and the other 30% were ongoing. And I had gone through a night tradition, which showed me how to be efficient and a little bit organized with things, and keep things in the proper structure they're supposed to be and not try to alter it because I think something's more convenient or whatever else. So when I get to a 10th step, the odd thing is I started to see with especially these three steps, these started early in my recovery. I had some experience with pieces of them, but I didn't really know how to use them the way they needed to be used. They told me early on, like one of the things my sponsor used to hammer me on was halts. Don't let yourself get too hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or take yourself too serious. And that's a 10 step tool. And again, when we do a four step, we do a searching and fearless moral inventory. The 10th step asked me to do the same process, just in a smaller scale. It asked me to just shrink it down to a day basis. The Just for Today chapter is phenomenal for this step. It asked me to just compact it, look at what you've done in the last 24 hours. Where are you? Take your temperature. Some days you're going to be running a little hot. Some days you're going to be running a little cold. Some days you're going to be just right. Now I've been clean a little while now. I've yet to find, when I've done a formal written 10th step, I've yet to write a perfect one. When I do a mental 10th step, I've yet to come up, there was one day where I sat back and, I'm laying in bed and I'm like, fuck. So I got up today. I didn't harm anyone. I didn't harm myself. I didn't do anything that's going to screw me up for tomorrow. I didn't do X, Y, and Z. And then it dawned on me. It's like, wait a second. I was sick and in bed all day. So if I'm going to be an active part of life, again, I'm human. And this step introduces me to that humanness. Now, here's the thing, though. Just because I'm an addict and I have the disease of addiction does not give me a pass. And kind of like what Paula had said, anybody in here have a car? All right. It's suggested that you change the oil. If you don't take that suggestion, what happens? Right. It's also suggested that you change the tires every so many miles. If you don't take that suggestion, what happens? All right. So having said that, the 10th step is, and again, I don't want to fly in the face of what anybody else has heard. I do not believe these three steps are fucking maintenance steps. They are growth steps. They require effort on a daily basis. When I do these steps, I further my journey down this path. If I do not do them, I regress. If I regress enough, I get high. My experience has shown that to me. I am drug-free, not drug-proof. So anyways, with this step, a lot of what it is nowadays, and I've cycled through the steps a couple times. The first time I did it out of the flat book. The second time I did it out of the old, you know, the original working step four thing. The third time I did it, it became very personal. Because a lot of what this step shows me is, how are my amends going? Am I still actively participating in the solution? Am I focused on growth? Or am I trying to just get okay with something? The most beautiful thing this step shows me is, have my defects changed clothes? Are my shortcomings sliding in other areas? You know, this step has a lot to do with my 6 and 7, because what I've seen over the course of time is none of my defects have been permanently removed. I am granted only a daily reprieve. The shortcomings that come from those defects have changed. My lust does not look like what it used to. My greed does not look like what it used to. My greed oftentimes is when I sit in a meeting. This is just an example, but when I sit in a meeting, and this is one of the, you know, and again, I'm not trying to sound like I have an ego about this, but if I sit in a meeting and I have the most time in the room, and I have a whole bunch, and I'm sitting in a room with a whole bunch of people with like 2 years or less, and they're talking about doing a fourth step, and it's a lot of theory, and I keep my mouth shut, that's greed, because I have stopped participating in the solution. I am not bringing the qualities that the benefits and the rewards of this step to the table. I am just letting the shit show go on, and I'm being a silent participant in it. That is a shortcoming for me. You know, and again, every shortcoming and defect I have, it is shifted over time, and it will find whatever way it can to work in my life. And again, the 10th step shows me how to do this stuff. And originally, like when I first started working the 10th step, a lot of it, like my red flag for it was like, if I needed to say I'm sorry about something, did I? And then it got deeper, and it was like, okay, did I need to take some sort of corrective action? And it was, you know, a lot of like what just previously been shared. Over time, the cool thing is that length of time between the infraction and the amends has shrunk. It has gotten from some, what in some cases was months to weeks, sometimes to days. Nowadays, it's usually pretty quick. Usually. And again, when I, and here's the thing, by acknowledging that the infraction and making the amends, I make a commitment to myself to not repeat it on anybody else or to anyone else. And there's a lot of freedom in that. And that way, like, my day does not, like, the car that doesn't get the oil change, my engine doesn't get so cluttered up with the crap that occurs on a daily basis that it breaks down at some point in the future. And again, once I get in the habit of doing the 10th step, there's a sense of freedom that occurs. And it takes time. And but after that sufficient length of time has occurred, like, I'm a little lighter than I was when I first started. Like, you know, and this is just my perception of things. You know, the way the steps kind of work is like, you know, the first step is basically stop and doing whatever it is you're doing that's so screwed up. Just stop. And stop. The second step is like understanding that I need help, and help's available. And the third step is showing me how to not shoot myself in the foot. But here's the thing. I didn't understand until I got to an 11th step that the third step, because like sometimes I read words and what actually processes in here has nothing to do with what's on the paper. Because I thought the third step said, do God's will. And every time I tried to, I screwed it up. Bad. the reason that is, again, my experience, the reason that consistently occurred is because I did not do steps 4 through 9. I'm incapable until I get to that 11th step. And when I get to the 11th step, the 11th step does not, like my expectation on it was that, like, you know, I would get in some sort of, like, form of transcendental meditation, whatever it may be, I was going to start hearing voices, or I was going to start getting this, like, powerful sense of, like, you must do this, and that kind of stuff. The 11th step is nothing more than a compass for me. And it took a long time for this step to be effective and like a practical tool in my life. Because, again, in order to do this step, there's a fine line between isolation and solitude. And I was, you know, when I first started doing this, I would isolate myself, which is not healthy for an addict. Because when I'm alone, I have my thoughts. And I didn't understand that, like, I could interrupt, like, because the way things go is, like, you know, thoughts lead to feelings, feelings lead to actions, actions lead to behaviors. I didn't understand in at first that I don't have to, like, listen to my thoughts so that I get a feeling from them. I can watch them, in a sense. But I need to be in a place, you know, and again, like Paula had shared, like, this environment's phenomenal for that kind of stuff for me, because the world seems to slow down just a little bit. You know, I have people, you know, that tell me, like, oh, I do my 11th step when I'm driving to work in the morning. When I'm driving to work in the morning, I'm a bastard. Like, I'm just thinking about how, like, you know, I have to go to work to make money. All the shit I got to do when I get home. You know, like I'm not ready to meditate. At some point, though, again, and it takes a lot of practice. In order to, whenever those thoughts occur, to not feed into them. I am powerless over, you know, and this is part of why the steps are in order for a reason. I am powerless over those thoughts. I do not have to feed into their insanity, nor do I have to act on them. And here's the thing. The way the disease works with me is that if I stop responding to the negative impulses, the volume gets turned down. And I'm not left with silence. I'm left with something else. And it's like, you know, one of my friends likes to say that the disease is feeling over intellect. Sanity is intellect over feeling. And recovery is conscience over intellect. And for me, that's making that shift from head to heart to gut. Like, and I watch a lot of movies, and one of my old, like, you know, I'm a little older, so, like, one of the movies I grew up loving was Clash of the Titans, right? So you have, like, you know, the guy who's the son of Zeus and, you know, the demigod, and he's put on this quest, and he has a mission, and he has a purpose. But he doesn't have what he needs to, you know, complete the task. But along his journey that he's taking, he finds the tools he needs. And again, the way I tend to look at things is, like, my God, like, you know, if I'm broke, my God doesn't let me win the lottery. My God gives me energy to bust my ass at work so I get a fucking raise. You know, and it's like one of those things, like, you know, if I need a tool, I don't get the tool. I get resources. And it's up to me to use them correctly. And I don't always figure that out on myself. The second tradition tells me that the loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. So the most direct microphone I have, or a direct speaker I have to the voice of a higher power is in a meeting. It's through a group conscience. So when I collect that, that is the most tangible expression there is. You know, Aaron, actually, here, let me pull this up for you real quick. Because I, again, my path on this is a little different than some people's. And just to make sure I didn't offend anybody, I wanted to pull it up with the literature. It says, outside, because I've seen the 11 step do a lot of damage when it's not done correctly and not done with guidance. A lot of damage. And it has a tendency to scar certain meetings. And this is from it's from our literature. Outside of Narcotics, this is basic text. Outside of Narcotics Anonymous, there are any number of different groups practicing meditation, but nearly all of them are connected with a particular religion or philosophy. An endorsement of any one of these methods would be a violation of our traditions and a restriction on the individual's freedom to have a God of their own understanding. Meditation allows us to develop spiritually in our own way. Some of the things that didn't work for us before might work today. We take a fresh look each day, 10th step, with an open mind. We now know that if we pray to do God's will, we will receive what is really best for us, regardless of what we think. This knowledge is based on our belief and experience as recovering addicts. And then it says this: prayer is communicating our concerns to a power greater than ourselves. When I share in a meeting, when I bring up a topic, is that not meet the definition of a prayer? I do not personally need to go to a church to do that. The process started my first week clean because I opened my mouth and said something. It also says in our literature that meditation is listening for the answer. So when I go into a meeting and I'm listening to what's being shared, is that not meditation? I do not need a church for that. I do not need any of the other stuff. Now, and let me clarify. I'm not bashing religion. I'm not talking against it. What I'm saying is that in line with our sixth tradition, to bring that in to a meeting, by default, what you are telling someone is that yours is right, everybody else's is wrong. You have separated yourself, and there's no principle of anonymity present at that point because of that endorsement. If a member chooses, and again, some of the guys I sponsored, you know, they go to church regularly, and there's nothing wrong with that. It is a supplement to their recovery. It is not a linchpin. We are free to do as we see fit. If through the meditation, you going to church and whatnot, or, you know, whether you do in yoga, which is, you know, just an exercise, Buddhism, which is a practice, not a religion. A Buddhist priest told me that and corrected me on it at length. Again, if that works, do it. What we have in common are the principles. I can sit down with someone who's a Baptist minister, which I've done, and talk about the principle of faith, and talk about the principle of commitment, and open-mindedness, and integrity, and purpose. We can find common ground and still build something. It does not have to be a divisive topic. The only time it turns that way is when I insist that my way is the way and yours is screwed up and you need to get on my level. So again, with that 11 step, I don't condemn anybody else's practices. I just ask for the same love and respect that I ask for. You know, it's reciprocal. And it needs to stay that way. Because, again, I'm sure if you've been around here for longer than 10 cups of coffee, you've been to a meeting that felt like a revival. You know, and for some of us, that works. But that's not what's in our literature. It's not what's in our traditions. And I didn't write this shit. If you want to argue with it, it's in paper. Don't argue with me. I don't have the time or the energy for it. So, all right. And again, because all that stuff is an outside issue. The 10th tradition showed me that. So it's best that I have no opinion on it whatsoever. And if I just shared a whole bunch of opinion, I apologize. I will try to make amends for it with the rest of what I have to say. So, having said that, you know, the 11th tradition talks about, you know, keeping level personal anonymity, level press radio and films, and this, that, and the third. All right, and here's the thing. That bleeds into the 12th step perfectly for me. Because I initially thought that since I had made it to the 12th step that I had reached some sort of imaginary finish line I was not aware of the, you know, the starting the steps over again and the benefits that would bring. I thought I had arrived somewhere, and that is not the case. When I'm on Facebook, I do not need the fucking quote and you know, my highlighted sharing from whatever meeting I was at, or even worse, copy someone else's like I said it. It also tells me that, you know, walking around, and again, I'm not trying to take a shot at anybody, but I stopped wearing NA gear a long time ago. Unless I can isolate it to just staying on grounds at a function. Because I don't know, like they told us a long time ago, you may be the only basic text anybody ever sees. So if I'm having one of my road rage things where I'm flipping somebody off because they cut me off on Carson Street when I'm trying to get to work and I'm running 20 minutes late, and it escalates and I walk out wearing an NA t-shirt and the cop shows up, what message does that say to the cops? You know, when we have these events and stuff like that, you know, Paula talked, this event's been here for 20 years. Same location. You know, the reason that happens is because we conduct ourselves like we're responsible people, and we're not here just having a party. You know, we act like acceptable, responsible, productive members of society. The 12th step, I will say this. One of the key things with it is service, but what I've found is that a lot of my 12th step work that involves my voice has nothing to do with NA. What my best execution of the 12th step comes through sponsorship. It comes from showing up at meetings, because it says in our 12th step that we need to be present and accessible. Once I've achieved some level of sanity and actually having a life worth, you know, working for, which I did not have when I got here, it is extremely selfish of me to hide away in my house 6 days a week, show up at my home group one night a week so I can say I'm active and think that I've done something. Because I was taught that a home group is service work. That is not where I go to get fed. I have to go to other meetings. I need to be visible. I can't be the guy that hides out, you know, in the house that they spend the other six, like, you know, I've sponsored guys that have these, like, literally $700,000 houses, drive a $100,000 car to a meeting with their, you know, could be model wife sitting at home, and they have no concept of fucking surrender. But to the untrained eye, it looks like that's what a program is, and it's not. I know more people that have more solid of a program that drive a piece of shit to the meeting, but they will stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning to talk to a newcomer it feels like using. They will answer the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. They will sit down and take time to explain things to people. They will show up and make coffee. I know a lot of people that, you know, think that, you know, service work, like, you know, one of the things we get really fucked up with the 11 tradition is, and I see this a lot, and I'm not trying to get on a soapbox here, but I know a lot of people, enough people, that it irritates me, where we get to, like, you know, year and a half, 2 years clean, and they start doing what they think is PR work for facilities outside of Narcotics Anonymous, and they get to do interviews with newspapers, and they get the glad handing, and they get the schmoozing, and they work their way into a job under the guise of, you know, practicing traditions. In the meantime, when I go to an area service committee, our fucking PI, we just had a PI workshop. There were two fucking people here. I see a lot of people that, you know, we have H&I workshops. Everybody flocks to it because it feels good to do H&I. There's that tactile, direct contact. There isn't a lack of, you know, you don't have to practice a lot of faith to see someone, you know, light up when you're talking to them and you tell them something funny. When you do PI work and, you know, various other forms of service, it requires, like, a solid application of traditions. You're held to standards. You're held to guidelines. A lot, you know, in our literature, it talks about the 12th step is giving back to what gave you life. And I remember that this program has shown me how to live. When I got here, I was homicidal. I was suicidal. There were certain moments I was genocidal. because I felt like I was a virus just spread amongst humanity, and the sooner I died, the better off everybody would be. That's the point that I started operating from. Today, I don't feel like that. I've seen that I have some assets. I can do some stuff. When I go to work, people don't know I'm in recovery. I don't tell them. They don't ask because I don't act like an obsessive compulsive psychopath. I practice principles. You know, I apply them when I work with the clients that I work with. Not that, you know, and it's not like I'm 12-step in the mentally handicapped community. But I explain the value of integrity and being honest. And if I make a commitment, I will follow through on it. And we expect the same from them. And it's reciprocal. That is explaining steps to people without breaking the anonymity and saying, you know, one of the things I always tell my guys when they're doing a night step is like, you know, there are a couple things we're not allowed to say. We're not allowed to say, I know, I'm sorry, fuck you, and this is part of my night step. Because it takes away the humanity from it. You know, go and tell someone you're sorry for something you did to them 20 years ago because someone told you you had to do it. You know, how well is that amends going to go? You know, again, practicing these principles, it gives value to my actions. It gives purpose to things. I feel, and beyond that, I know I'm in a better place than I used to be. And this isn't anything I could have figured out on my own. If I could have did this shit by myself, I'd have never came to meeting number two. You know, I have to continually ask for help with this stuff. You know, I have a little bit of clean time now, but I don't know what 15 years feels like. I have to ask someone for their experience on that. Not theory, their experience. This is why it's so important for the predecessors to keep coming back. You know, I mean, I got pulled into an ASC commitment a couple years ago just out of sheer frustration because I would talk to people about what was going on. They're like, well, no one here knows about this stuff. And I thought they were just like, you know, I'm like, oh, you just need to reach out and talk to more people and you'll be fine. And I show up the ASC commitment and there's nobody there with over 5 years clean. And me and all these other people with over a decade are sitting around bitching about why shit's fucked up. Maybe it's because the people that have the experience stop giving back. So I got involved. And a couple other people did too. And it's not that I'm so fucking powerful. It's just the experience presented itself. And instead of running on theory, we didn't have to waste our time spinning, you know, our wheels on shit that we already learned 10 years ago didn't work. So... and I got a little bit, I got like another minute, so I'm going to burn it off real quick with the 12th tradition. I'm a firm believer that the principle of anonymity is the polar opposite of self-centeredness and self-obsession. And when I first came into the rooms, I thought the 12th tradition told me that I needed to practice principles over your personality. No, it's I have to practice principles over my personality. In my dealings with everybody. You know, and another little piece of wisdom, and I'm going to shut up. You know, one of our predecessors told me a long time ago that if I can't practice these principles in all my affairs, then what I may need to change is my affairs. So, you know, and again, that's a really humbling piece to learn, that there are certain situations I'm just not going to do well in. But by diverting my time from the shit that I'm a constant failure at to the stuff that I can actually, you know, do some good work in, everything works out just fine. You know, I was scared to sponsor people for years because the first sponsee I had, I kept in my pocket and, you know, marched him around every meeting. And when he wrote a step, I wrote on mine. It was like really sick and codependent because that's where I was at 3 years clean. You know, and when he used, it broke my fucking heart, and I chased them all over Westmoreland County trying to find them. And I was like, I'm never going to go through that again. And then a few years ago, about 5 years ago, some kid asked me to sponsor him, and I'd a couple months before that, he just got released from jail, and he came to my home group and got a key tag, and sobbing and bawling all over my shirt, and I just couldn't fucking say no to him. And you know what? 5 years later, that kid probably saved my life. Because, I won't sit back like I'm on some kind of throne and tell people to do X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, you come with me, I will show you. Do you understand? Yes. All right, cool. I got to go help somebody else. And it just goes on and on and on. And my purpose here is never done. I mean, again, the program Narcotics Anonymous is free, but freedom isn't. And rent is fucking due daily. So every day when I do my 10-step, did I pay rent today? And this isn't my rent. What I do when I leave here is my rent. When one of my guys calls and I answer the phone. When I got to write on the step I need to write on that I've been procrastinating on for like 2 weeks now. That's how I pay rent. This is a gift. This isn't something I have to do. It's something I get to do. And that's all I got. Thanks.